Welcome to the Insurers the Best Policy podcast. My name's David Bull, and this is the second of a two-part interview with Tom Vandiver, head of the Financial Institutions Group for the Americas of Barclays. Today we'll be talking about low interest rates, debt financing, how carriers are looking to free up capital, the IPO market, and insurtech valuations. So Tom, looking at some of the macroeconomic impacts of COVID-19, what effect will lower for longer interest rates have on the P&C sector, including M&A dynamics?
Yeah, look, I think that it puts maybe even a greater emphasis on underwriting margin. Just like when we were talking about the distribution business, having positive and even significant positive underwriting margin, I just think becomes that much more important, right? If you've got significant underwriting margin, you have to give up a couple hundred basis points. If you start with a big buffer, obviously, you're in much better shape than if you start with a small buffer. And I do think the market, the correlation between price to book multiples and ROEs is pretty hard to explain through direct observation. But I do think that when you sort of peel the onion back, it's really the companies that, have resilient, are perceived as having resilient underwriting that, are the ones that, are really getting all the attention from investors and are able to, trade it at premium valuations. And, I just think investors are very wary of sort of an aggressive stretch for yield or trying to sort of get paid for putting investment leverage on the balance sheet as opposed to, really pressing down on the fundamentals of quality underwriting. So I think that that's what you see when you sort of look at valuations in today's marketplace. And I just think that there's going to be more and more pressure to, sort of position oneself in that way as opposed to just, thinking about being more of an investment vehicle.
Let's talk about the IPO market. Now, of course, we've seen quite a few notable insurance IPOs in the last year or so, and Palomar and Lemonade would certainly fall into that category. Both of those attracted significant investor interest and surging share prices after floating. So does that mean the IPO route is an attractive opportunity again, or were those recent examples unique cases?
The IPO market itself is very, very robust. And I think that, investors generally are looking to sort of monetize on situations that can take advantage of the work from home environment. And really, I think the underlying thesis is that more and more of our lives, have become digitalized and virtual as opposed to physical. And for companies that are in position to, take advantage of those trends, I think the IPO market has been very, very favorable. And, look, as long as the stock market continues to perform well and the new issue market continues to perform well, I think that people are going to have to continue to look at new IPOs as they come. The risk for IPO investors is that if you take your eye off the ball, you can be in a position where you leave a lot of money on the table. And a lot of these investors, the reality is one of the ways in which they deliver alpha to their clients is by playing the new issue calendar. So it's really at a point where it's feeding upon itself because of the success of some of the deals that you mentioned, particularly in the P&C space. But the one thing that I'd emphasize, David, is that it's broader than just the insurance space. I think that insurance is one of the areas that's benefiting from a much broader set of drivers and themes that investors are focused on today. And obviously, insurance is a significant part of our overall economy. It's a very interesting sector of the economy, but I do think that it sort of fits into a much broader theme that is sort of playing out in the IPO market as we're observing it right now.
Of course, we've seen broader tech bubbles in the past. Do you think we're seeing the emergence of an insurtech bubble?
I mean, look, it's really hard to predict what's a bubble, when you're sort of in a market that's robust. Bubble's a little bit of a loaded word, that the companies that are going public can be successful. Expectations are obviously very, very high, and the market is robust, and that's what's motivating people to go public. But it's hard to say, whether or not you can sort of predict that there's some sort of a bubble. I do think that what these companies are doing is, somewhere between evolutionary and revolutionary, and that's why it's got the level of interest that it does. So you can appreciate that as an investment banker, we're bullish on what people can accomplish and the robustness of the market, you have to have interesting stories to actually, you know, feed that. And I do think that what's going on in the marketplace is very, very interesting. And we'll only know, you know, whether valuations were sort of justified with the benefit of hindsight. It certainly is an unusual time. I mean, I will say I lived through the dot-com era. And, you know, obviously in retrospect, you know, there were a lot of stories there that played out unbelievably well, right? People could have said the same thing about some of the companies now that are worth multiples, tens, hundreds, or thousands of times of what they went public for in the late 90s or early 2000s. And then, you know, there are a number of companies that went out of existence pretty quickly. So it's a different kind of investment than we're used to in insurance. And I think that's maybe one of the things that's so interesting about it. There may be a binary aspect to it. We won't really be sure for 3, 4, 5 years, but it's certainly a different kind of investing than you're sort of used to seeing as an insurance person.
Has the impact of COVID-19 accelerated interest from carriers and brokers in building and buying insurtech platforms? And how do you see that segment developing from a corporate finance and fundraising perspective?
Yeah, look, I think that one of the natural places for startups to end up is actually, you know, within the carriers. And, you know, I was recently having a conversation with somebody about this who was suggesting that, you know, the insurtechs are like, in some ways, like the new set of newcos. The newcos that we were talking about before came along and created something that was new, that the insurance industry, you know, that the existing carriers didn't do on their own, but, you know, a lot of them ended up being part of, you know, larger, you know, more diversified carriers. And I do think that, you know, some of the insurtechs will naturally end up there, and some already have. I think that both streams that you talk about, both the traditional sort of venture capitalist finance startups, as well as some of the things that the carriers are doing internally, there's obviously a path for both. And I do think that, you know, all of this was already in play before COVID. I think that, you know, that's one way of looking at it, is just say, okay, well, this was all stuff that, you know, was being heavily mined even before we got into the COVID environment. On the other hand, you know, I've certainly heard people say that the COVID environment is likely to accelerate that, just like it's accelerating digitalization and, you know, sort of virtual on many fronts. You think about, you know, sort of what's happening in healthcare or home buying or entertainment. And I think what we see is that, you know, more consumers are willing to sort of engage in the sort of do-it-yourself exercise because they're doing that in other parts of their lives. So, you know, why not try to do that for insurance as well? So, you know, there's certainly a strong argument that the environment that we're in is causing and will cause an acceleration of those trends that have probably been in place for, you know, many, many years now.
On the subject of debt financing more generally across the P&C sector, Tom, how much activity have you seen this year around restructuring debt, and what are the drivers?
Yeah, look, it's really, you know, initially there were, you know, situations where people were raising debt to show that they had access to the capital markets and to build liquidity, right? Because financial institutions, you sort of learn from an early age, the big thing that you have to protect against is liquidity risk. And look, I will say the whole financial system is in, you know, much, much better shape. If you look at the, you know, banking system in the US, the capitalization of the banking system is multiples of what it was at the time of the financial crisis. I do think there was a little bit of an instinctive reaction to, you know, say, okay, we're going into a really risky, unknown situation at the outset of COVID. So there, you know, there was a little bit of a people wanting to make sure that they had enough liquidity. I think that once the Fed stepped in, and, you know, you think about all the government action that's taken place, both on the fiscal side and the monetary side, I think that concerns around liquidity subsided pretty quickly, both just an examination of the facts and, you know, what a different situation financial institutions are in, you know, versus where we were during the financial crisis, but then how swiftly the government responded. I think we pretty quickly got to a place where all of a sudden interest rates had collapsed and credit spreads started grinding tighter. So it went from being very defensive to being very, very offensive. So a lot of the stuff that's, you know, a lot of the issuance that's happened over the last 2 or 3 months has been much more offensive, where people are looking at their, you know, liability portfolio and saying, why not take advantage of the fact that we're in a record low interest rate environment and very, very attractive credit spreads and ability to extend duration, ability to, you know, pre-fund future obligations. And that really, I think, has been the trend and will continue to be the trend for the balance of this year. And by the way, across all sectors, the investment grade debt capital markets in the U.S., you know, has set monthly record after monthly record. When you think about, you know, what happened over the course of May and June, you know, and also trickled into July, and even August has been a very, very interesting month on the new issue front, because normally you think by the time you get to mid-August, like last week, you know, should have been, you know, based on history, a relatively slow week, but there was still issuance happening, you know, even into the third week of August. So, and it really is around that theme of, you know, being opportunistic and, you know, positioning your balance sheet for the long term.
The debt conversation is obviously part of this, but with pressures on both sides of the balance sheet, what conversations are you having with carrier clients about capital efficiencies, restructuring, and freeing up capital for hard market opportunities?
Yeah, well, look, this is where the sidecar discussion becomes interesting, and where the, you know, the private equity discussion becomes interesting, because, you know, I think existing carriers want to free up capital and capacity to take advantage of the hard market, you know, just like, you know, startup or scale-ups want to do, right? So I think that there is quite a bit of balance sheet positioning going on right now. Obviously, you've seen some, you know, public equity raises. That's one way of getting after it. But, you know, the other way of getting after it is to just, you know, restructure, you know, one's own book of business, to de-emphasize lines of business that, you know, don't have the same profit potential as other lines of business. And I think there's a lot of that going on organically. And I do think that there will be transactions that allow that to happen, you know, more profoundly, just in terms of, you know, balance sheet repositioning, whether it's, you know, capital raising in the form of a sidecar, whether it's, you know, sale of a runoff business, or, you know, whether there's additional new capital being raised in the form of pipes, you know, which are private equity style investments into public companies. I think all of those alternatives are sort of in the toolbox and being looked at by people that want to take advantage of the market environment that we're in.
We talked a bit about the low interest rate environment earlier, but how are insurers adapting their investment strategies to counter the volatility seen this year in the financial markets?
Yeah, well, look, it's really interesting thinking about this question of what one does with one's investment portfolio in the environment that we're in. In some ways, it's still sort of early days, because we've only been in this environment. We've gone from, you know, one environment pre-COVID to, you know, an environment where, you know, it turns out with retrospect, there were a lot of sort of juicy investment opportunities, but the opportunity set was very, very short-lived in terms of finding, you know, a lot of excess yield and excess spread available. And now we're in this environment where, you know, on the one hand, you know, it's likely to be low for long, and credit spreads have ground tighter, and the search for yield is on. The banking system, for example, I was just having a conversation with some of my colleagues this morning, like a Monday morning catch up. And we were talking about how the banking system is, loan to deposit ratios are, you know, at very, very low levels. There's just not enough, you know, sort of quality loans to go around in the banking system. And there's so much liquidity in the form of deposits. It's very, very hard, you know, so spread income is under a tremendous amount of pressure. And there's really two ways as a fixed income investor to counteract that, maybe three ways that I can think of. One is to extend duration. But it's hard to do that, right? Because even if you move out the curve, there's not a whole lot of extra yield pickup right now. And, you know, you could be in an environment where, you know, inflation and, you know, yields pick up over the coming years. And, you know, if you sort of locked into a long duration, obviously those types of investments are very, very interest rate sensitive. So, that's one thing that you can do, but it obviously entails a lot of risk now. The other thing you can do is you can stretch on, taking credit risk. And then the final thing that people do is, you try to get creative around structure or, accessing different types of risk that may not be readily available in sort of commoditized form. So private lending is an example of that, as opposed to buying securities and taking credit risk that way, is now, for example, a good time to get into private credit or to boost one's commercial lending portfolio, right? Which would be a little bit of a contrarian move, because the commercial real estate market is obviously under a fair bit of pressure right now. So David, I'd answer the question. It's a little bit of a non-answer, but it's very early days in trying to figure out what one should actually do in this environment. Should one just try to really focus on delivering underwriting profit and, stick to one's knitting in the investment portfolio? Or are there more creative things that you need to do, that you just need to do within the investment for portfolio to make the returns that you need to generate for your investors? It's a very, very interesting question, where I do think that different players in the marketplace will take, different approaches to trying to, get to the right answer on that.
Well, thanks, Tom, for participating, and thanks to you, our listeners, for listening in. We've got a great pipeline of podcasts, so do visit our website at www.theinsurer.com for further details and to access more of our high-value content.